Welcome to The Squeal, PIC Swine Management Podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. In this series, we've covered recruitment and onboarding. Well, today's topic is retention, keeping turnover low. And what's worked for our guest, Neil Paskewicz?
I'm Neil Paskewicz. I work with Wakefield Pork. I've been with Wakefield for a little over 5 years now. I've been in the industry for a little over 20.
Seaboard Foods' Kay Stinson.
My name is Kay Stinson. I'm the Vice President of Human Resources and Animal Care for Seaboard Foods. I've worked for Seaboard for 20 years, and I've been in this capacity for the last 11.
And PIC's Ashley Hinken.
My name is Ashley Hinken. I've been with PIC Canada, predominantly focused on human resources for the last 2.5 years. I've recently branched more into working with our own production farms in the United States.
So you've got them comfortable. How long do they stay? What's your average, if you don't mind sharing, what's your average retention?
I don't know what retention is. Our annualized turnover is just over 20% for this year. So fairly low.
Ours runs higher than that. We're a little over 50% on our full-time positions. And then we fill a lot of part-time positions as well. We're using part-time labor also. And we tend to not really look at our part-time turnover because, again, we're hiring them because they're part-time. If they want to come work for the summer and they leave, we want a chance to hire them back. Same with how we would look at our full-time turnover as well. But we tend to be about around 50% or a little bit less seasonally. It doesn't really change a whole lot.
Ashley?
In the U.S., we're roughly around that 35% turnover percentage mark. In Canada, we're sitting closer to that 15%. I really think part of that is due to a higher level of foreign worker recruitment in Canada. You know, obviously, somebody coming on a three-year work permit, we're generally seeing that three-year commitment last for that time. We've certainly seen our turnover percentage decrease, which is good, right? Obviously, you want to be able to retain those employees. But, you know, it really does fluctuate, though, as well. And Kay makes a really good point that when you look at some of the part-time staff as well for us, that's an all-encompassed number. I think that part-time staff turnover can certainly increase some of those percentages sometimes. But generally, that's where we're seeing ourselves sit.
So the days of 50 years and the gold watch are probably behind us and probably just as well. But what are some of your good retention tools other than good management and, you know, treating the employee right? Are there weapons at your disposal to help people recognize that, oh, if I stay another period of time, I'll be able to qualify for this? How do you retain people?
Most of our retention efforts, I would tell you, are simply through opportunity for growth and advancement. We're going to have a 401k program. Years ago, we had a pension program. We're going to try to keep our wages competitive. We're going to try to have employee perks and employee appreciation things throughout the year. But we really, you know, right or wrong, and I'm not saying we're experts in this area, but we're really going to try to focus on growth and opportunity throughout the business. If it's a place that somebody wants to make a long-term career of, and we've missed that in them or missed explaining to them, you know, shame on us, because there's plenty of opportunity, right? So we've used that as our biggest retention effort for those that want to stay in the industry and stay living where we've got operations at.
And how often do you do an evaluation that tells you if you're on the right track with their interests?
We do an annual evaluation, but honestly, it's that constant interaction with employees. Outside of having a formal evaluation process, you know, we're trying to use our succession planning, our management framework and structure for where we've got jobs at, where they bring value to the organization at, and trying to make sure that we have a constant dialogue about, what do you want to do? Here's something that maybe you haven't considered. What about this? You know, we're relying more on that organic and very fluid conversation that happens, you know, throughout the week, the month, the year, in addition to just the employee evaluation at the end of the year.
Ashley, how's PIC do it?
Yeah, very similar to Kay's comments, really focusing on that growth and development of employees, being able to outline a path for them to show them where their career can go. Also being able to highlight to them that while you may start in production, maybe you're going to end in a different area of the business. So I think just giving people a better overall view of the company, what it has to offer, has been huge. As well, like Kay said, looking at having competitive compensation, a healthy benefits package, 401k, those are all tools that we use as well. I would say something that we've really focused on is employee engagement surveys, asking for that feedback, being able to create action plans and show to the staff that we're taking the feedback that they're giving and we're creating those action plans. We're making changes because we care about what they say. And I think that's helped with our turnover rate, to be honest with you, Ned. I really do think that people feel more appreciated and that they feel heard that way. So those are some of the tools that we're currently using. I think also focusing on, you know, diversity and inclusion and being able to highlight those topics has been a change for us as well.
Neil, how are you keeping people?
Yeah, I mean, we do the years of service. It's every 5 years, so it's not a yearly thing, but that's out there for the employees. I think the biggest thing for us, and you know, Kay and Ashley both mentioned it, but really focusing on the development of our younger people, existing employees, and getting them to where they want to go. Just giving them the time, giving them the face time to have a conversation with the supervisors, have a conversation with myself, having the ownership out on the farms, having conversations about what their future might look like, to keep them engaged, keep them motivated. I think we try to keep people learning. You know, prior to COVID, we, you know, did pretty routinely have meetings, you know, whether it be a breeding meeting or a farrowing meeting, where we'd bring everybody in. Just to provide some education, some outside resources, just to keep them engaged. You know, and every time you do that, you see a bump in production or you see a bump in energy level. So that's obviously something we've been fighting this year is how do we maintain that energy level given the current constraints we have. But
how do you?
It's been a struggle. You know, we've done more virtual stuff that doesn't have the same impact as being face-to-face with somebody. Kind of got, you know, things loosened up a little bit in this state for now, you know, and considering, you know, we're doing some smaller group things where maybe we don't bring in 40 or 50 people at a time. We'll bring in half a dozen so we can social distance and do all that good stuff and still be able to get that face-to-face time, you know. And there's still a lot of time that we just have to go out and spend time on the farms. There's nothing like having a conversation with somebody over a crate about, you know, what are your future goals? What are your future plans? What do you want to learn yet? What excites you about your job today? And just that connection from the top to the bottom, I think plays a big part in why people stay. If everybody knows your name, you feel pretty good about that. So like I said, I think a lot of it is just that, I don't know how you said it, Ashley, but the contact with another person, another individual that is concerned about your well-being and where you want to go in the future.
Work schedules. Well, Kay mentioned she part-time. How do you manage work schedules? What, I mean, is there something, is there a phone app for that?
There are phone apps for that, and we've looked at some of those as well. But at least what we've tried to do from a simplicity sake in our system, we've got farms in 5 different states and, you know, over 600, 700 locations individually. For us, we've looked at full-time equivalents per size of farm and type of farm. So if we've said, hey, you know, this is a farm that the work, the standard operating procedures, you know, the standard headcount for this farm is 15 full-time equivalents, then we've, you know, left it a bit to the farm manager and production manager, along with whoever that HR recruiting business partner is, to, you know, how can you get, what does 15 look like for you? Is that 10 full-time and, you know, 8 or 10 part-time? Is it, you know, we wouldn't have maybe that many part-time people on a farm, but how best can you get to that full-time equivalent number and cover what needs to be covered and stay within your, you know, operating parameters, if you will. And so we've really tried to do it that way on a system this size within animal operations. Within our plant processing operations, which is, you know, maybe not necessarily what we're talking about here today, we really tried to look at jobs that are conducive to part-time roles so that we say, hey, these are jobs that we can put people into that are part-time. And so, you know, we can handle the in and out or the flexibility differently than we can in other places of the business or in those facilities. We try to keep things pretty simple and straightforward. And that's how we've handled the flexibility within the farms piece.
We use a lot of part-timers, you know, the weekends, the holidays, that's what nobody likes. But utilizing high school part-time kids allows us to kind of keep our weekend rotations going. Kind of our goal is that, you know, if the farm sits down in January and decides who's going to work what holidays and what weekend they're on, that we maintain that consistently throughout the year. So that if our employees want to plan something in July, they know they got July 4th off and, you know, they can take that time if they want to, just to allow them that the ability just to schedule beyond what next week might bring or 2 weeks might bring, and just kind of give them that peace of mind that here's the schedule. It shouldn't change. You know, then if we do, you know, people get promoted, people leave, we bring new people in. And I think our objective there is just let's not change anything that we don't have to. Let's keep everything as normal as we can. If we have to shift one person versus shifting five, let's shift that one person and move forward. But I think the thing for us is just the peace of mind that employees can plan their life outside of work, knowing when they have to work and when they're going to have to be there.
So for us, when I look at, you know, our genetic nucleus farms, I think of, you know, our breeding and farrowing teams, our nursery and finishing, generally they have the same flow, right? So what we've really found is a 3-week work rotation is very accommodating to people rather than having to work every second weekend. Let's get creative in how we can make it so that they work every third weekend, right? And then that way you're only working 17 weekends out of the year as opposed to much more than that. So that's one thing that we do when we look at our boar stud locations. Obviously, a lot of them have extremely early morning starts. So their work schedules, you know, some days when I think of our three Birchwood facilities, they'll have a 10-hour day of collections on Mondays and Fridays. So it's all about how can we balance those middle days in the week? What are the tasks that need to get done? When do they need to get done by? And create some flexibility by, hey, if you're in at 4 that morning, we're going to have you out by 10 a.m. And then you're going to have the whole day. You can book some personal appointments. You don't have to eat up all of your vacation pay that way. So for us, it's all about that creativity, right? What needs to get done? And to Kay's point, you know, figuring out how many people do we need to do the job, who needs to be here that day, and then be able to flex that. With COVID, it was a really big eye-opener for us when you think of childcare, right? Mm-hmm. Schools closing, who's going to, you know, if you have a husband and wife combo working together, who's going to take care of the kids during that day? We had to get really flexible in our operations and look at night shift options, which has actually opened up a whole new world for us. And, you know, when we think of the farrowing department, has also helped with some of those, you know, mortality rates, right? So there's been some positive things come from that as well. And things that we just need to remember that it's a changing world. We can't just have a cookie cutter that, hey, this is how it's always going to work and function, and have some of that versatility to make sure that we can meet operational needs, but also be an employer of choice and a people magnet that says, hey, come work for us. We do our best to help accommodate schedules.
What would your employees say was the biggest impact on them within the job place from COVID?
I think at least at Seaboard, and I'm going to say this for our whole, the Seaboard Foods, for the whole organization, and not just try to think about it from animal operations perspective. But I think what I have heard is that we're a pretty involved management team and executive team, and it's obviously unintentionally, but I think they just felt a certain amount of silos maybe that really weren't there before, you know, because everybody has to stay in their lane, small groups, that camaraderie, that interaction, the engagement, all of the things that you have when you're able to come out to sites, come where the people are working at, I think that's really important for people, and we sometimes underestimate just how important that is. But I think they really do appreciate it. They appreciate seeing leadership, ownership, people out and and at work sites where they're at. And however, you know, every company, farm size, et cetera, is different. But I think they would say it's, you know, it's just felt a little, in some ways, a little bit more isolation within different work groups. And in other ways, you know, maybe they've had to rely on new technology or virtual meetings, and there's been some involvement that people have had that maybe they would have had before, because it's easier to jump on a phone now than actually have to drive somewhere and go to a meeting.
I think if you were to ask our employees, you know, we kind of do an annual competition between all the farms from a production standpoint. We've done it for years and years, long before I've been here. It's something they really look forward to. You know, I think we made a tough decision early on in this that we didn't want people to, you know, risk their health or come in when they shouldn't be coming in because they don't feel good, but they didn't want to let the farm down in the competition. So we made a decision early on that we were going to forgo that competition this year. It really shook some people. You know, they look forward to seeing what the other farms are doing, you know, having that competitive edge or seeing where they can improve. And to not have that has kind of left a void for us this year. And to me, that's the one thing that stands out the most, is they just miss that, you know, that connection, that being able to see what everybody else is doing, missing the meetings, missing, hey, I used to see this guy twice a year at these meetings. Now I don't get to see him. And just the personal side of it.
Yeah. Ashley?
Yeah, I would say from my perspective, it's been very similar to Neil, where for us, it's just that human interaction. Due to COVID, we've even staggered break times and made sure that, you know, small amounts of people. So, you know, maybe three people at a time taking their lunch and staggering in shower times, things like that. And it's, hey, I'm used to eating lunch with these people every day and, you know, catching up on things and not being able to do that. And it's hard. I'll say from my own experience, I love showering into the farm and going and visiting staff and having conversations. And when you go in, it feels so foreign to be like, there's no one really to chat with because the break room's empty. So I think that's been one of the biggest challenges. Also, you know, for us, our operation in Canada works very close with the ones in the US. And due to this, I'll call it the imaginary line, right? Just different ways of how the countries are dealing with the pandemic. It's caused, you know, a lot of kind of contention that way, right? Where for our employees, if they travel outside of the country, they have a mandatory federal 14-day quarantine coming back to Canada. We're in the US, different that way. So there's been some, you know, some issues with that, I will say, and just kind of that feeling of unfairness, so to speak, because of how things are dealt with differently. But I think that we've done a really good job to try to, you know, use our online technology platforms more for communication and try to continue to have those meetings and tell people, turn your camera on. It's great to see you. You know, that has been a big change as well.
I'll invite you to ask questions of each other, something that someone may have said that intrigued you or you're just curious about how they operated.
One question that I would have for you guys is, you know, this is just sort of still a thought that brews, but do you think we can be successful in this industry taking young people that, you know, coming right out of high school, maybe they don't know what they want to do and they're not located in our local communities, meaning they would require some kind of a move. And if you think about what the gap year was in or is in the European countries and kind of taking that year off, or if you think about people that chose to go into the military right out of high school, there are young people that have had to relocate, move, et cetera, for different reasons, different kinds of opportunities. Do you think there's an opportunity for us to do that in animal agriculture with people that, you know, so you're looking at people that may need the opportunity, may welcome a play, you know, way to kind of like go somewhere else and see something. And they're probably not going to know anything about animal production. Do you think we could make that work? And if we could, what are kind of, you know, outside of housing, what's the basic thing we would, you know, what are some of those thing hurdles we'd have to be willing to get over?
I personally think one of the hurdles, I think we can do it. I think it's just going to be a complete culture change in mindset, to be honest. And it's mm-hmm. going to be that change of mindset of somebody thinking, hey, this is worth a shot versus they're just going to be gone in the next year, right? Like, or maybe this won't work out in the next month. It's a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. I think that it just, I truly believe that there just needs to be that shift of thinking of, you know, long term, right? So sometimes you need that short-term investment for long-term gain. I think that that would be a key piece of that. And also, like you said, you know, setting up things like housing, that's a huge thing, but also already creating networks for them to be able to rely on, right? Mm-hmm. These are your people. These are your go-to people in the areas, creating that sense of belonging for them off the start, because they probably know, hey, maybe they've never seen a pig, right? Hey, yeah. I don't know the difference there. So I think that's what it takes. And sometimes we just get in this mindset of, hey, I got to go in, I got a job to do, get it done. And it's shifting that, right? Giving people opportunities and also reminding people that they were once given an opportunity too. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's possible. I think we just have to get over the fact of, you know, you hear a lot of, well, we tried that once 10 years ago and it didn't work. Or, you know, that I think nowadays we have to kind of go back to some of those things that maybe we tried that didn't work so well and come at them again, maybe in a different way. I think we got huge populations of youth out there that are sitting in situations where they don't have a job and the prospects are low. I mean, you look around every community that I drive through and everybody's hiring. And how do we track them to the rural area? I think has been the biggest struggle. There's been a lot of talk around here about, you know, how do we get more engaged with the Minneapolis, St. Paul, Twin Cities area, mm-hmm. get more agriculture into those schools, get more of those kids interested in it. But to get them to move to the rural area has always kind of been, I don't really know if I want to do that, but I don't want to say give up, you know, it's mm-hmm. okay. Let's look at it differently then. It's a huge feat.
Yeah, it's interesting to me, and it's intriguing because I think there's so many things that we could gain from it as an industry by, you know, kind of sharing the population of where they tend to be centered at. But I think we have to figure out the housing and the transportation component. We have to build and design a system that can accommodate. And to Ashley's point, like if you could somehow set it up that this is a 2-year commitment, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe there's something that, you know, and 2 days a month, we want you to go back and share your experience with the high school that you graduated from or whatever, so that we can start to really feed on that peer feedback and building that with some more success. But I think, you know, most young people need, and you know, they need an opportunity, whether they can afford to go to college or not, whether they should go to college or not. There's something that could come out of that 2 years right out of high school that could be helpful for our industry if we can structure and design some things in a way to make them more successful. There's some positives certainly that come for those young people because it's a good job. It's a way for them to earn and become, have some financial independence so that as they think about their, it gives them more opportunities, right? You know, if you have a little bit of financial independence about you, you've got some opportunities. And when I think about some of just the rhetoric that we deal with in our country today about our inability to be inclusive at times, it certainly starts to solve for some of those social issues too. Some in a small way, we're not going to save the world by any means, but these are great jobs, great learning opportunities, and $16 an hour for a young person is, you know, has been a relatively decent hourly rate of pay. You know, because they don't have a lot of other responsibilities, or they likely usually aren't, don't have a family to take care of. And, you know, if we can satisfy for housing and transportation, you know, outside of a cell phone, we've checked all three boxes, right?
I have a question that specifically for Neil, but also like Kay's input. I am fascinated that you're able to continue to just tap into that local recruitment. I guess, what's your secret?
I can't take credit for that. You know, I came into this system. I think our ownership over the years has built a very good reputation for themselves. You know, and I think it's just that connection that the ownership maintains with the employees. You know, to be honest with you, or Mary, you guys probably know who Mary is, but she's out doing reviews on farms right now. So she's spent the last month meeting with every individual employee. You talk about things that employees look forward to. That's one day of the year that all the employees really look forward to. Just to have 10 or 15 minutes of her time, you know, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, just that connection with the top management of the company. And to know that she knows their name and who they are. And it's something that gets tougher and tougher, you know, as we'll have people that retire that have been here for since the beginning. You know, we're getting to that point where we're going to start having retirements. And as that younger group comes up, it's okay. Somebody else's responsibility now to keep that going. It's a daunting task when I think about it, because somebody's going to have to continue that when Mary decides that, you know, she wants to go enjoy life. But I think that's the biggest thing that's really done it, is that she stayed connected to everybody. And she expects everybody in this organization to treat everybody with respect. Whether you started yesterday or whether you've been here for 30 years, we all have a place. And if we're not having fun, she makes sure that we find a way to have fun. She will force us to have fun. You know, I think that's been, from what I see, the biggest thing is just the connection they have. You know, and I think going through COVID has just kind of reinforced that a little bit, to get the direct communication, to be able to understand, you know, her thoughts, Steve's thoughts on, you know, this is what we're doing as an organization. This is what we're doing to keep you healthy, keep you safe. And we'll continue to do it. Let us know what else we need to do. And I think it's just that open dialogue.
Kate, do you guys, you know, that's amazing to hear, right? And, you know, as an HR team, you know, wishing that there was more hours in the day sometimes, right? And so do you guys do efforts similar to that, Kay?
We have tried several different means of getting employee feedback, and none of them super effective. I would tell you one of the most effective things is just simply, and it's a lot what Neil just said, the Mary of whether it's animal operations or at the plant or within HR. I mean, I had almost 100% participation rate on a 401k survey that I sent out. And I'm like, oh, hey, well, you know, if I can send these questions out and get 100%, you know, maybe I should spend my entire day every day doing this, because it's impossible to get to all the locations. And I think it's a really important thing that we have to do. We've tried texting software, our communication app, et cetera. And it's just nothing still takes the place of the kind of highest level person coming in, asking some thoughtful questions and trying to be, you know, diligent and intentional about understanding what people have to say and think. And to the extent we can replicate that, you know, it's still the best means, right?
That's recruitment, onboarding, and retention in this special series on The Squeal. Many thanks to our guest, Kay Stinson, Ashley Hinken, and Neil Piskewich. Whether you're tuning in for the first time or you're a longtime listener, take a second to subscribe to The Squeal. It's the easiest way to stay up to date with the latest podcast episodes. Just search for The Squeal wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're already a subscriber, visit your phone settings and turn notifications on so you'll never miss an episode. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.